Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 4 from Canto 6, Chapter 11. The transcendental qualities of Vritrasura. The transcendental qualities of an asura. Anyway. Kim va ucharatair matur davad mi prishtato hatai nahi bhita vadak shlagyo nasvargya sura maninam kimva ucharatair matur davad bi prishtato hatai nahi bhita vadak shlagyo nasvargya Shura Manina. Kim, what is the benefit? Vaha, for you. Ucharatai, with those like the stool. Not very complimentary. Matuhu. Of the mother. Dhavadbihi. Running away. Prishtataha. From the back. Hattai. Killed. Na. Not. He. Certainly. Bhitavadaha. The killing of a person who is afraid. Shlagyaha, glorious. Na, nor. Svargyaha, leading to the heavenly planets. Shura maninam, of persons who consider themselves heroes. I'm going to read the translation. I'm going to go back to the beginning. We'll hear the translation again. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, they have come from the bodies of their mothers exactly like stool. What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind if they're running in fear? One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious. Nor can it promote one to the heavenly planets. We'll go back and, I'm assuming you didn't read these two verses in the beginning, they have no purport. So, starting with text one. Well, let's read the chapter summary. This chapter describes Vritrasura's great qualities. When the prominent commanders of the demons fled, not hearing Vritrasura's advice, Vritrasura condemned them all as cowards. Speaking very bravely, he stood alone to face the demigods. When the demigods saw Vritrasura's attitude, they were so afraid that they practically fainted. And Vritrasura began trampling them down. Unable to tolerate this, Indra, the king of the demigods, threw his club at Vritrasura. But Vritrasura was such a great hero that he easily caught the club with his left hand and used it to beat Indra's elephant. Struck by the blow of Vritrasura, the elephant was pushed back 14 yards and fell with Indra on its back. Paragraph. King Indra had first accepted Vishwarup as his priest and thereafter killed him. Reminding Indra of his heinous activities, Vritrasura said, if one is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, and depends on Lord Vishnu in every respect, then victory, opulence, and peace of mind are all inevitably available. Such a person has nothing for which to aspire in the three worlds. The Supreme Lord is so kind that he especially favors such a devotee by not giving him opulence that will hamper his devotional service. Therefore, I wish to give up everything for the service of the Lord. I wish always to chant the glories of the Lord and engage in his service. Let me become unattached to my worldly family. He was born from a fire, by the way. But his father was Tvashta, so he had a family. Let me become unattached to my worldly family and make friendships with the devotees of the Lord. I do not desire to be promoted to the higher planetary systems, even to Dhruvaloka or Brahmaloka. Dhruvaloka, by the way, is a spiritual planet. Nor do I desire an unconquerable position within this material world. I have no need for such things. So this is how it begins. Text 1, translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King Vritrasura, the commander-in-chief of the demons, advised his lieutenants in the principles of religion. But the cowardly demoniac commanders intent upon fleeing the battlefield were so disturbed by fear that they could not accept his words. Texts 2 and 3. O King Parikshit, the demigods, taking advantage of a favorable opportunity presented by time, attacked the army of the demons from the rear and began driving away the demoniac soldiers, scattering them here and there as if their army had no leader. Seeing the pitiable condition of his soldiers, Vritrasura, the best of the asuras, who was also called Indra Shatru, the enemy of Indra, was very much aggrieved. Unable to tolerate such reverses, he stopped and forcefully rebuked the demigods, speaking the following words in an angry mood. So here's his words again. This morning's verse. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, they have come from the bodies of their mothers exactly like stool. What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind when they're running in fear? One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious, nor can it promote one to the heavenly planets. Report. Vaishnava Prabhupada. Two paragraphs. Starts with, Vritrasura rebuked both the demigods and the demoniac soldiers because the demons are running in fear of their lives and the demigods were killing them from behind. The actions of both were abominable. When a fight takes place, the opposing armies must be prepared to fight like heroes. A hero never runs from the field of battle. He always fights face to face, determined to gain victory or lay down his life in the fight. That is heroic. Killing an enemy from behind is also inglorious. When an enemy turns his back and runs in fear of his life, he should not be killed. This is the etiquette of military science. And last paragraph, Vritrasura insulted the demoniac soldiers by comparing them to the stool of their mothers. Both stool and a cowardly son come from the abdomen of the mother, and Vritrasura said that there is no difference between them. A similar comparison was given by Tulsidas, who commented that a son and urine both come from the same channel. In other words, semen and urine both come from the genitals, but semen produces a child, whereas urine produces nothing. Therefore, if a child is neither a hero nor a devotee, he is not a son, but urine. Similarly, Chanakya Pandit also said, Korta putrena jatena yona vidvan na dharmika kanena chakshusha kimba chakshu pidaiva kevalam. Translation. What is the use of a son who is neither glorious nor devoted to the Lord? Such a son is like a blind eye which simply gives pain but cannot help one see. Chakshu pidaiva, pidaiva kevalam. Well, at least as far as this narration goes, this is the first time Vitrasara is speaking. And Prabhupada said you can know a person by their speech. They can do different things and look in different ways and so forth. But the position of a person can be understood through their speaking. And by visual appearance, Vitrasara was really scary. Imagine some entity, some creature coming from a sacrificial fire and rising up to the sky with sharp teeth and big mace and huge body with hair as red as copper and eyes in an angry mood, smashing everything in sight. Get out of the way. This, woo. So he was very fearful and in an angry mood. Meant at least intent, the intention of Tvashta was that this entity, this creature, would destroy Indra because Indra mercilessly killed his son, a brahmana. Such inglorious, heinous. Which it really isn't the position of a brahmana, but that's what Tvashta did anyways. So he's speaking, although he's born as, his label here or his category is Asura. And why is he called Asura? Here's a Srimad Bhagavatam quiz question. Where else, very, very important verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, where else does it speak about the enemies of Indra? Here the word is Indra, Shatru. If you remember from the earlier verses, he was supposed to say Indra Shatroho, but he said Indra Shatro, which means he made a boo-boo. And so he created an entity that would be killed by Indra rather than one who would kill Indra. Just one syllable off. Indra Shatru. He's the enemy of Indra. And Indra kills his enemy. The verse? Huh? 1328, exactly. So 1328 is the principal verse of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. A little message from Jiva Goswami. This comes from my study of Sri Brahma Samhita. The first verse of Sri Brahma Samhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit ananda vigraha anadir adir govinda sarva karana karanam. So it's the principal utterance, the mahavakya of Sri Brahma Samhita. And Jiva Goswami describes in his commentary to Sri Brahma Samhita and also elsewhere in Krishna Sandarbha, he describes what that is, what's a mahavakya or paribhashya sutra. Paribhashya sutra, technically, in Jiva Goswami's words, is one verse that governs all of the other verses in a writing that may have many, many, many seemingly unrelated points. It governs them. And the many, many, many seemingly unrelated points are actually to illustrate or expand the meaning of the Paribhashya Sutra. So, and that means, you know, in reverse, if there's some many, many statements over here and you don't know exactly what it means, go back to the Paribhashya Sutra and it will help you understand what it means. And you can't derive a different meaning from the many, many statements if it's in conflict with or contrary to the Paribhashya Sutra. The Paribhashya Sutra of Sri Brahma Samhita is stating in different language, very similar, almost the same message as the Paribhashya Sutra of the Bhagavatam. And that is, Krishna is the source of everything. Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. Ishvara Parama Krishna. He's the supreme controller of all who may be controllers. We're little controllers, really little controllers. But there's controllers of those controllers. There's the devas. Well, there's like other people, the government people and other people that think we're the controllers of these little controllers. Then there's the demigods who are the controllers of those people who are the controllers of little controllers. And then there's the controller of those. Parama, Ishvara Parama, Krishna. And Anadir Adir, he's the original who has no origin. It means he doesn't come into being or there's no cause of him. He's the original that has no cause. Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karnam. So that's what Sri Brahma Samhita is describing. He's it. Krishna is, you know, the search for the absolute truth. Task finished, because that's Krishna. Now, the various ways in which Krishna is the cause of all causes and the origin of all things, who has no, and he who has no origin, and so forth. The text expands that, and it does exactly what it does. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, 1.3.28 is the Paribhashya Sutra. Again, one verse that governs so many 17,999 other verses. It's a powerful verse. It governs all of them. And in this one verse, we generally emphasize just the one part of it that indicates that Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is the source of all the avatars, because in this chapter, chapter 3 of Canto 1, following a question by the sages of Naimisharanya Sutta, is giving examples of forms of the Lord as they descend in this world, because that was one of his questions. And later those forms of the Lord, although just mentioned in chapter 3, they're expanded upon later, in later verses. But after reciting some of them, certainly not exhaustive list of all of them, Sutta Goswami speaks this verse, which is, Ete changsa kala pung san krishnas tu bhagavan swayam. And Jiva Goswami analyzes this verse very critically. It's found in Chaitanya Charitamrita also. Some people don't get it. So, you know, the sense, the exact rules of Sanskrit govern how to properly understand this verse. So you can read that section if you like. Although Krishna is previously in this chapter listed as one of the avatars, here it says he's the source of all the avatars. Although he appears by his mercy as an avatar, it's by his mercy. He's not, anyway, he's the cause of all causes. He's the source of those avatars, and he's the source of everything. It's not a small point. It's a critical point, essential point. Therefore, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. You know, the refrain of the Govinda Stotra is understanding his position naturally. There's like not just, wow, he's great, but it's, we are eternally connected with him. And everything is eternally connected with him. Therefore, we should engage in his devotional service. But higher than that is our natural position, our eternal position is one of a loving exchange in relation to Krishna, Govinda. And then this second half, in drari vyakulam lokam mridayanti yuge yuge. So, Indra, Ari, A-R-I, is the enemy of Indra. This is Indra Chatru, the enemy of Indra. So anyone that's an enemy of Indra, what order are they in the category of? There's the Sura and then there's the Asura. They're in the category of Asura. You oppose Indra. It means that you oppose Vishnu. You oppose Vishnu, you oppose Indra. So like, either way. So therefore, he's in the category of Asura, because he's fighting Indra. But that's superficial. Because one who fights Indra is a category of Asura doesn't mean that's his consciousness. It's like Bali Maharaj was in the family of Asuras, but he was worshipper of Vishnu. And when Shukracharya said, don't surrender to Vishnu, he said, I can't follow what you're saying. Because according to scripture, one should give everything to Vishnu. I'm ready to give everything to Vishnu. I have to not follow your instruction because it's against scripture. Although he was in a family of Asuras. And he was not only in the family of Asuras, he was leading the army of the Asuras, Bali. And same as Vritrasura. He's leading the army of the Asuras. But he's not an Asura. I mean, he's the enemy of Indra, but he's more elevated than they are. And two things right away. He's referring to Dharma when instructing the demons. Yes? Here's the Sanskrit. Ta evam sangshito dharma sam samsataha He's praising samsataha, dharma. He's instructing them in principles of dharma. And what specifically the principle of dharma is, you're a kshatriya, and here's a principle of dharma for kshatriyas. You don't leave the battlefield. You don't run from the battlefield. Oh, look at, the demigods are very powerful. Yikes, and you run from the battlefield. Heroes, those that are, it's a qualification of a kshatriya. They're heroic. If you don't have that qualification of being heroic, you ain't a kshatriya. And that qualification of heroism is you stand and fight. Exactly as Krishna is instructing Arjuna, stand and fight. Armed with yoga, stand and fight. Well, the asuras weren't armed with yoga. And even they were, A, they were given principles of dharma. B, the person who was giving those principles of dharma is this giant, powerful person. You know, just like hide behind his legs or something, because he's a hero. But they ran anyways. And so Dhritarashtra, it says, was disgusted. This is adharma. You can't live by adharma. Now, think about it for just a moment. In the Kurukshetra battle that we're somewhat familiar with, depending upon how long you've been around, and in Ramayana, the big battle between Ravana and Ram, and the warriors of Ravana and Ram, although they were demons, they abided by Kshatriya principles. Yes? I mean, there's an exception or two. But they, in principle, even demons, this is Vedic culture, they would abide by dharma. So what's wrong with them if they would abide by dharma? What's wrong with them is they had a different purpose. They were enemies of Krishna or Ram or enemies of those intimately connected with Krishna. In the case of the Kauravas, intimately connected with Krishna as the Pandavas, and they were inimical like anything to the Pandavas. And they gave up their lives. They were heroes. And in the presence of Krishna, they went back to Godhead, but in Vedic culture, otherwise not in the presence of Krishna, one who gives up, a kshatriya, who gives up his life on the battlefield, attains the heavenly planets. All you have to do is be a kshatriya, go on the battlefield, and give up your life. According to, you know, pursuing religious principle. Not just, you know, some dumb other thing. But in pursuance of adhering to religious principle. That's your nature, and it's heavenly destination. So that's why he's later, so Vritrasura again is later admonishing the demigods by saying, this isn't a way that you attain the heavenly planets. We know, you know, you're residents of the heavenly planets, but if you give up your, because you're demigods, but if you give up your lives in battlefield in a proper way, you'll remain after this life heavenly planets. So he's giving Vedic teaching, although he's in the category of a demon. At least apparently because he's enemy of Indra. He's just following the mandate of the mantra of Tvashta. He was created for that purpose, to act in that way and then be killed by Indra. It was ordained. It was ordained in part by the curse of Parvati. We're going to hear that later section. King Chitraketu became cursed by Parvati because he thought she thought he offended Lord Shiva, so she cursed him. But when he was cursed to become Vritrasura, he got the body of a Vritrasura and he was conducting his activities according to the curse and according to the intention of his father, Trishta. He was doing his duty according to the indication of his father, but his consciousness wasn't the consciousness of an Asura. And that's astonishing fact comes out later. But even before the astonishing, you know, he was on the, as we heard the little summary of the, of this chapter summary at the beginning. He's on the topmost platform of devotional service, although in the form of a demon. It's pretty awkward. And leading the soldiers of demons and taking the position of the enemy of Indra. He was doing this in Krishna consciousness. Pretty unique. He wasn't at all attached to anything of this world. He was on the topmost platform of Krishna consciousness. He was performing a function. I mean, pretty awkward one, but he was performing the function very well. I mean, after that, we heard the little chapter summary, after that speech, it's really beautiful. He's with Krishna platform, just by remembrance of Krishna and speaking to Indra. But then Indra realizes from the speech of Vritrasura, he's not an asura. He's a perfectly realized soul. In fact, Vritrasura speaks to Indra that we have the same Lord, Vishnu. And please remember that Vishnu has already blessed you with this very special thunderbolt weapon that he told you how to get it. Take the bones of Dadichi, to Vishwakarma, and he'll fashion a thunderbolt weapon with those bones that are meant to kill me. So it's already decided. Indra, you know, don't forget Vishnu. You're victorious. Take that weapon and let me have it. And then you'll get what you want. You want your kingdom back. And I'll get what I want. I go back to Godhead. I get released of this curse from Parvati. So Indra, go to it. But Indra couldn't because he's a topmost devotee. How can I use my weapon to kill the topmost devotee? Again, forgetting Vishnu, because he already spelled it out. I'll get released. It's a curse, and I'll get released from the curse. So please do it. Don't hesitate. Good for you, good for me. So he still hesitated. So he took his club and started ready to throw his club at Indra. So like Indra would have to, you know, stand and fight. Indra wasn't going to run from the battlefield. So then Indra stood and fought. He was just, you know, moving the movie or the script or the, you know, the drama down the next step so that the will of Lord Vishnu would prevail. That's what devotees do. Let the will of Vishnu prevail. Even it looks like, you know, yikes, something that may be hurtful for me. You know, my interest may be not met while the interest of Vishnu is being met. what's my interest other than the interest of Vishnu? That's the topmost devotee. So again, here he's speaking dharma, worldly dharma to the demons, and he's speaking worldly dharma to the demigods. And the worldly dharma to the demigods is this morning's verse. Well, two things. In the second line, Davadbi Prishtato Hatai. Prishtato means from the back. You don't shoot somebody from the back. That's not a hero. And then similarly, somebody that's afraid of death. You don't kill somebody that's afraid of death. A hero doesn't do that. You know, two counts. These are adharmic for a kshatriya. And then in the verse, it also says, the last line, shura maninam. They're thinking of themselves as heroes, but their behavior is not that of heroes. You're in violation. He's like blowing the whistle. You know, you're foul. Penalty. Two counts of adharma for you guys. The verse prior to this one, before he speaks, seeing these two adharmic conducts, he was very aggrieved. He's interested in protecting dharma. And those who are dharma followers, what is it generally that they're interested in? A and B. They want material prosperity and they want to attain a better position in their next life. This life, prosperity. Next life, even better. So he was holding out, you know, this behavior doesn't match your interest. Like bhoga aishwarya. You want sense gratification. You want prosperity for sense gratification. You want your kingdom back. And you don't want to go, you know, to the hellish position from doing a dharma to get it. Because that's what's going on. A dharma to get the heavenly destination. Not going to happen. So he's severely chastising them. I mean, that's what specifically, again, what the verse says. Of the previous verse. He spoke near Bhartasya idam. Oh, here we go. Nivarya ojasa. He stopped them with his powerful words. And speaking with ojasa, great strength. Rebuking them. He's like, he's letting them have it. He's instructing the demigods. He's a powerful guy. He's not just like, you know, chivalry kind of talk. It's dharma kind of talk. Ritrasa is a fascinating character. Very, not easy to understand. Very puzzling. I don't know how those who are not devotees hearing from disciplic succession are going to understand this chapter at all. They probably don't. So to be continued. Any discussion?
Namaraj, thank you for class. So My question, well, it's more of like a clarification. So at first you see that Vitrasura is in the demon body, so you might assume he's acting on the nature of his body, the modes of nature, but he's a pure devotee, so he's not acting on Svardharma or the modes of nature. He's acting on pure Dharma just to please Krishna. Is that?
Yep.
That's what he's acting on.
Yes, that's where he's at.
Okay.
It's puzzling. Because, you know, it looks like something else. But his words and this speech that comes in later in this chapter reveals that is his position, that is his consciousness. Yes.
Oftentimes in our classes, we emphasize that unless their example follows their speech, then their speech doesn't have much meaning. We often hear that message in our classes. In other words, if someone can give a nice class, that doesn't mean that he's properly situated, for example. And that's a message that we hear again and again and again.
Well, I'd like to argue that point a little bit.
Well, I definitely argue that point all the time. Yeah, I mean, so you don't have to argue with me.
Okay.
We're on the same team.
I didn't say I'd argue with you. I said I'd like to argue that point a little bit.
But my question is, because that is, and it arguably also it makes sense. Someone can give, Nayam Atma Pravachane Nalabhya. It's not by giving a good Pravachan that someone can be said to have the mercy of the Lord. But here you're kind of underscoring to some degree how Vitrasura's speech is revealing his position of devotion.
Yes. Yeah.
But his actions are bewildering.
Inconsistent.
Yeah. So.
Superficially only.
Nevertheless, the superficial was right before the purview of the eye.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering how do we process looking at devotees who may also have realizations, actually, speaking very nicely, but their actions are inconsistent, etc. We tend to think somewhat adversely of such individuals.
Certainly we do. Well, you know, the qualification of Vitrasura is not the qualification of one of us, for starters. Well, you have to be on that platform in order to see that. Otherwise, you won't see it. You'll see the external only, and then, do the conventional. You make judgments according to the external. That's what goes on all the time. And then generally, even our understanding of the external is, misshapen. And, based upon our own autobiography, our own modes of nature thing, and then we see accordingly, and then make judgments. It's really dumb. So but that's common. So a thoughtful person will then say, "Well, gee, I guess my main business is put the brake pedal on the making judgments thing, and put the gas pedal on trying to make my consciousness pure," which is Bhaktisiddhanta's one of our favorite, my favorite instructions. One who is a fault finder is, it does so because their heart is impure. Their heart is honeycombed with the very same fault. So their first business, the brake pedal and gas pedal, just change them. Stop making judgments and finding fault and so forth, and make one's own heart pure. That's your program. Make your own heart pure. And then, as one's own heart becomes progressively more pure, one can see beyond the behavior and see the consciousness. And then, discrimination, not judgment, but or fault evaluation, but discrimination as far as, well, why would somebody whose consciousness here be doing something that's inconsistent with their consciousness? At least, why does it appear like that? like is happening here with Vritrasura. But if one doesn't have that spiritual qualification, one isn't going to be able to see properly. So then what to do? The advice for such a person is put on the brake pedal and move your foot over to the make the heart pure gas pedal. That should be your assignment for the time being. That address your question? Yes, Luke, and then Jagatananda. Jagatananda, you want to speak?
Guru Maharaj. Yeah, Alex. We hear from Srila Prabhupada that when we are trying to become Krishna consciousness, when we try to become Krishna conscious, yeah, it's like declaring a war against Maya.
Yes, I've heard that.
So while Vritrasura is instructing the asuras and the suras about the war, like the literally the war, can we take these instructions of Vritrasura for us in that spirit that Srila Prabhupada talks about? To not, you know, stand up and fight and, you know, stay the course, not run away from the battlefield. Because we are not Kshatriyas.
Can I give a qualified yes?
Yeah.
And the qualified yes is according to our capacity. So, supposing one's capacity is this, their waging of war is going to be according to capacity, or advisably according to capacity. So if one's capacity is this, and they try to do that which is the capacity of someone that has this capacity, they're going to get knocked over and get discouraged. Oh, what's the use? Because this, you know, I'm no good, or there's something wrong with the system, or something like that. And one should, you know, you pick your battles wisely. you take ones that are, you know, within your scope. And, you know, save the other ones for what, as you become more spiritually qualified and spiritually empowered. Alright? Does that answer your question?
Yes, Maharaj, yeah. And one other part of the purport, the rest of the purport, Prabhupada is talking about, you know, a worthy son, in a way. A worthy son. So again, we have our, you know, biological parents, and then we are also like descendants of this awesome parampara. So I'm taking it to become, you know, like, at least be devoted, as he says, if you can't be a hero, at least be devoted to Krishna. So,
if you can't be a hero, then at least be a devotee of Krishna.
Yes, Maharaj. So,
well, heroes should be heroes, and those that, supposing somebody's a brahmana and not a kshatriya, it's not like they should lament, oh, I'm not a hero. Or supposing somebody's a whatever they are, somebody's a vaishya, somebody's a shudra. You know, they don't have to lament, oh, I'm not a hero. You follow?
Whether we are famous or not famous, but we should have devotion,
yeah,
in our heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the class.
Thank you for leading a nice Mangalarti this morning.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's my pleasure. This is a follow-up to Jai Jagannathpur's point. Question. I was seeking clarification on a certain interpretation that I took from these statements. You can judge a saintly person by the quality of their speech. It seems to me that...
Well, I didn't use the word judge. You can understand a person.
Yeah, thank you for... Yeah. That's... I think that's more appropriate also. understanding where one is situated by the quality of their speech. And to me it seems that, as Jaya Jagannath Prabhu was pointing out, the quality of the philosophical dissertation is more of an external consideration. And one interpretation I've had that seems to be consistent with my own Krishna conscious development so far is that the sound vibration of a devotee carries the quality of his consciousness.
Sure. So there's... Which is the same thing as the other one, by the way.
Well, the distinction I see is that...
One can say the words in a lower consciousness, one can say the same words in a higher consciousness.
Yeah.
And they convey different effect.
Yeah. Which is perceivable by persons who have some degree of purity. The difference, like there's the verse in the 9th chapter of the Gita, Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam, that there's a transcendental pratyaksha, or sense perception, that corresponds with spiritual, you know, it's spiritual experience. And then there's that verse in the Bhagavatam that the sound vibration of a devotee, it carries the dust particles of the lotus feet of the Lord. So when we hear from persons who have that quality of consciousness, then there's a powerful experience that comes along with that.
Sure.
Of course, you know, it's also easy to get carried away by, like, mental speculation and all these, like, you know, mundane emotions. So it's very important to use other measurements in addition to that. But I was just thinking of that. So I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Sure. The short answer. Everything that you said is built within the other statement. You've just very kindly expanded on it. Meaning, you can understand the position of person by their speech. It's not only do they see these words instead of those words. That's like one of the ways which Prabhupada makes this statement of you can understand the position of a person when they speak is characterizing a realized person from a fool. A fool may dress themselves this way and, you know, do some austerities or whatever it is and have a long beard or whatever it is, you know, have some externals that you don't know what their position is until they speak. And when they speak, then you can know their position. That's one way. But another way is you can understand a person's position by their speech. Like, as you said, the effect of their speech on modify, I'd like to modify what you said because you're asking me, you know. So not only the person who is spiritually situated will the words of the qualified person's speech act on their heart, even an unqualified person, it will act on their heart. And they'll feel something. They'll have some realization of that, the effect of that person's speech in a various, you know, in varying degrees. But, you know, and specifically I'm thinking of persons that came into the association of Srila Prabhupada. If you've watched any of those memories, videos, again and again and again and again and again, and it's like a theme that, and even just he looked and he saw right through me and all of my impurity and, like, you know, I was tumbled and, you know, like that. So then he says something and just a not spiritually situated person hearing from such a person as Srila Prabhupada, it affected them tremendously. Now who knows what the previous lifetime spiritual progress of that person was before that association took place. Who can say? But not least at the moment, spiritually situated person hearing that sound vibration, which is my response to your question is, what you said is an expansion of the same message. It's just, you know, a further elaboration on the same message. Not inconsistent with that message. Let's say, you know, even say it, take it the other way. Someone, which it seemed like, anyway, someone says, but their quality is actually abominable. But they say cool things, or they say the right things, or they say, you know, they speak things, but their character inside is rotten. So, you know, that can also be understood, if, especially if one is spiritually situated. But, you know, go back the other way. Like Devananda Pandit, who was speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was a Mayavadi. And Srivas Pandit heard the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he fainted in ecstasy. Because of the words of Bhagavatam. So, something else.
So this is a expansion off Jaya's question.
All right, he started something.
So we come to understand that Krishna and transcendence is transrational and even
transrational. That's a nice word.
Even transethical. It's like beyond ethics.
Trans what?
Ethical, like beyond
sure.
Ethics. So
sure.
One might ration that we should do away with logic. We don't need it but. We understand we need logic
yes.
to get to a certain point. So
well, we don't need logic to get to a certain point.
Right,
but we can use logic to get to a certain
logic.
Point.
It's a powerful tool.
Yeah.
But when do we
can
know?
Use everything in Krishna service,
right.
Including that.
So, is there a point where we jettison logic? We kind of do away with it, or is it that when we receive bhakti, it naturally cleanses our intelligence?
You don't jettison it; just spiritualizes it.
Right.
That's a short answer. I mean, for example, you look like whoa. For example, our acharyas, they use logic, but it's totally spiritual logic. Right? I mean, you want an example of that? No, you don't. So you don't need it. Let's say, just take this Ete Changsa Kala Pung Sang verse. Some people, our acharyas say, some people interpret it this way. It's not okay to interpret it this way. And they give their logical reasons why it's not okay to read it this way. They're using logic. They're using rules of Sanskrit grammar. It's not proper. It's improper. Here comes, you know, Professor Puffy Wuffy, and he hears that argument and he dismisses it. We go, that's not right. This is right. This is the right way to see it. You know, I don't accept that for this reason, that reason. So it's inconclusive for the, you know, Professor Puffy Wuffy. So it's not compelling, but our transcendental acharyas, they use transcendental logic or spiritualized logic or transcendent logic, whatever the term you were using. And if people are not on the platform of transcendence, they'll reject it. That's okay. But for those that are on the platform of at least faithful recipients of messages in disciplic succession, it moves the heart. Although it's logic, it moved the heart toward Krishna. That's the test. something on the ladies' side? That's otherwise Jai Jagannath is very enthusiastic.
But with a different example, because the discussion was brought up about the sound vibration carrying a certain quality which is transformative. But I was thinking of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who we would say sound vibration is certainly full of pure devotion. And,
yes.
And yet his sound vibration would often turn people away. And I'm remembering one particular pastime of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav where he gave a program and hundreds of people came to the Pandal program. And on the first day, I think he spoke about Krishna Leela. It was kind of a little bit of a light topic. And everyone loved it. So the next day, it doubled. Yeah, it doubled the amount of people who showed up. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta went Srila Bhaktisiddhanta style. And this really strong language. And everyone left the program. Literally, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava says, everyone left except for one person who ended up becoming a disciple. So here's just another example of someone who is full of pure devotion, certainly very concerned about the welfare of the living entities. Certainly his sound vibration will be carrying compassion, and yet it was misunderstood by hundreds and hundreds of people in the Pandal program. And so you've already answered this question, but I'm just bringing it up again for the purpose of underscoring the challenges that we face as conditioned souls, recognizing who is in what position.
Sure. And I would say, you know, you might say something different, but I would say somebody on Bhaktisiddhanta's platform is, because he's directly moved by Supersoul, it's one thing when he does it, it's another thing when we do it. Because we're not directly moved by Supersoul, nor do we have the, you know, the potency to buy that speech. This one person out of the hundreds becomes, you know, a follower of Lord Chaitanya's message. We don't have that same potency. We can't imitate the perfected souls. We can understand from their example, there are times when to do this and times when to do that. When you're very elevated, when you're not very elevated, you know, you have different parameter, you know, according to suitability again. According to suitability. According to our position. And, you know, we need to know what our position is. And then we also have our different natures. Some do it this way and some do it that way. That's diversity. But we have to have, the first business is to become qualified before we take a bold step forward and do something. So we take a simple step forward and carry the message, that's all. Okay, thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki.